Chapter 15
Ethan,
the familiar voice insisted into his consciousness, nagging him to rise.
Ethan,
it repeated, this time more urgently. The scent of a fire reached his nostrils. Together with the sound of many hushed voices nearby, it was sufficient to prod him into finally opening his eyes.
Ethan!
It was Marcus, kneeling beside him again. But this time it wasn't the Marcus he'd known on Earth. This was the older man, weathered by time and tempered by hardship. His dark eyes stared at him from a few feet away.
Are you ready?
He asked. All around him, in small, scattered groups, was a large gathering of dwarves, together with a lesser number of elves. He was back in Lumnia. Had he passed through the heart? No, came the answer quickly. Certainly not. This had to be another trick.
I said, are you ready?
Marcus repeated. Ready? For what? Marcus blew out a long breath.
It's happened again,
he called over his shoulder. From within a group of elves, Kira emerged, a deep look of concern on her face. How bad is he? Marcus touched Ethan on the shoulder.
Do you know where you are?
He asked. Not receiving any reply, he turned to the approaching Kira.
Pretty damn bad, I'd say.
She knelt beside Marcus and gave Ethan a forced smile. Do you know who I am? A trick, he thought. Just another trick. Marcus rubbed the back of his neck.
This keeps getting harder.
You can stop, Ethan told him. I still have my memory. Whatever you did to me the first time, it won't work again. Kira leaned over and leveled her gaze. Ethan, you need to listen to me now. I found you 3 days ago at the foot of Gol Shupa. You told me that Chinzan had driven you from the heart of Lumnia and robbed you of your sanity. Since then, your memory has come and gone. He sniffed. Is that right? Then tell me, how did you know where to find me? You just happened along and there I was, right? No, she replied. Chinzan sent word to us. This drew a derisive laugh. He sent word? That's pretty amazing, but I guess it's good to know he cares. Marcus cut in, his tone hard.
You don't understand. He has Cat. He's demanding that you face him. If you don't...
Kira's elbow jabbed into Marcus, stopping him from saying anything further. After taking a deep breath, she turned her attention to Ethan. He says that if you face him, he will allow her to live. Her voice was now soft and comforting, as if soothing a skittish horse. We're on our way to save her, right now. The problem is, you keep forgetting where you are. I can only assume that it's because of what happened to you while passing through Lumnia's heart. She reached out to touch his hand, but he drew back. I need for you to focus. If you don't, Cat will die.
This isn't going to work,
Ethan growled, raising his eyes skyward. You can stop now. I'm not falling for it. Without warning, Marcus leaned forward and slapped Ethan hard across the cheek.
Snap the fuck out of it, he shouted.
Kira quickly placed herself between the pair. Enough! Ethan jumped up and retreated a step, ready to fight. But Marcus made no attempt to force his way past Kira. After a tense moment, he jerked himself free and rose abruptly.
He'd better damn well start remembering,
he muttered, before storming off. Ethan watched as his friend sat down amongst a group of dwarves. A convincing ruse, to be sure, but a ruse nonetheless. His cheek was burning from the impact, and he noticed a soft red glow starting to radiate from his hands, a sure sign that he was angry. What's more, his anger was still building. The temptation to destroy the false images around him was becoming stronger by the second.
Please don't, said Kira, clearly seeing the fury in his eyes. Listen to me. I'm begging you. Hear what I've got to say.
She gestured for him to sit. Ethan allowed the power flowing through him to subside, though initially he remained stubbornly standing. She was just as stubborn, however, and said nothing more until he'd complied.
Marcus is still grieving, she explained. Lilanora's death has cut him to the core.
His eyes flashed over to Marcus. He was squatting in front of a fire, totally ignoring the dwarves around him, and picking angrily at the grass by his feet. Lilanora, dead. Nice touch. How did she die?
Get as much information as possible, Ethan told himself. Use it to unravel the deception.
Kira's eyes became downcast.
She was killed while trying to stop the Rakasa from taking Kat. A group of them infiltrated our ranks under the cover of darkness, and after dragging Kat with a poison dart, they were in the act of dragging her from her tent when Lilanora caught them. As she fought to save Kat, one of them plunged a dagger through her heart from behind.
Ethan huffed. A likely story. You expect me to believe they managed to get away with carrying Kat through the middle of thousands of soldiers?
Rakasa are not to be underestimated, she told him. They killed 20 dwarves during their flight, then sacrificed all but one of their number so that the one carrying Kat could escape. By the time we were able to mount a pursuit, the creature had vanished into the hills.
And this is the rescue party?
Ethan nodded at the assembled groups. This is all that remains of our army, she said, a slight tremor in her voice.
How is that possible?
Kira remained silent for a time, as if unable to bring herself to speak the words. Eventually, she cleared her throat and wiped away the tears welling in her eyes.
It was Shinzan, she said. He came forth from his palace shortly after Kat was taken. We were no match for his power. He slaughtered us like spring lambs. 50,000 of us died in the fires he created during the first 10 minutes alone.
Ethan was watching her every move, listening to every word. The likeness was exact, not a single flaw. Taken from his memories, he assumed.
And how is it you escaped? He asked. My guards rendered me unconscious and carried me away, she explained, this time showing a hint of anger. The rest we have gathered along the way, stragglers with nowhere to go. Were it not for the valor of Lineal, I doubt there would even be this many of us remaining. He stood against Shinzan long enough for some to get away. Of course, he was not nearly powerful enough to stop the cursed Emperor for very long.
She hugged her shoulders.
I'm told he died screaming in an inferno of black fire.
And what about King Gannix? Or David and Val?
We don't know. I would like to believe that they still live. But after what I saw unleashed...
Her voice trailed off. So, what now?
Marcus has discovered where the Rakasa has taken Kat, she replied. That's where we're heading now. Shinzan has said that he will meet you at the site of your first battle to settle things, which is good. The place Kat is being held is some distance away from where he is waiting. We're hoping we can get to her before Shinzan is aware of us.
She frowned.
Unless, of course, this is all a trap. I suppose we'll know one way or the other in a few hours.
Ethan regarded her. Had Shinzan been able to again rob him of his memory, he would have been totally convinced. Everything was there. The despair in her voice, the anguish he could see in Marcus, even the way the remaining elves and dwarves were brooding hopelessly. When all put together, it was a perfect illusion.
I've heard enough, he said. It's good, I'll admit that. And if you'd started off with this instead of plopping me back in France, it might have worked. But, like I said before, I'm not falling for it.
Is that really what you think?
Kira stood sharply up and drew a dagger from her belt.
If you truly believe that none of this is real, then here.
She held out the blade.
Take this and stab me through the heart.
Before Ethan could respond, she grabbed his wrist. In a single fluid motion, she pressed the handle into his palm and the tip of the blade to her left breast.
Do it, she challenged. Or are you unsure?
Ethan met her gaze, but she did not wither, nor did she look afraid. He tried to withdraw his hand, but her hold was vice-like. When he looked down, he saw that a spot of blood was soaking through her shirt. Part of him wanted to put it to the test. But this deception was clever, he realized. Just enough to instill the tiniest bit of doubt. Enough for him not to risk killing a dear friend. I still don't believe any of this, he said, opening his fingers away from the dagger handle. Kira released her grip.
I do not pretend to understand what you are going through. But if you can hang on to reason for a while longer, all will be made clear to you. We will rescue Kat, and perhaps seeing her will restore your mind.
Yeah, sure. Without waiting for her to say anything further, Ethan walked quickly away. Separating himself from the others, he took a seat beneath a young birch tree. Kira joined Marcus for a time, then went to speak with a few of her kin. Much as Ethan wanted to dismiss them, the tiny lingering doubts remained. What he was seeing here was exactly how he'd imagine it might turn out should he fail to destroy Shinzan. The power he inherited from Martok had made him fully aware of how devastating the Emperor could be should he come forth from his palace. He could easily consume an entire army in a lake of fire, should he choose to, or bury every one of them alive with a flick of his fingers. Worse still, Ethan was equally sure that slaughter on this scale was precisely what would happen should he not succeed in passing through the heart of Lumnia.
But that's how you're doing this, isn't it? He said to himself. You're showing me all of my worst fears.
As soon as he could be totally sure this was false, he would do what was needed to end it. Or would he? The only way to finish things would be by killing his friends, and Shinzan was well aware that he would hesitate to do so. His frustration grew. Even understanding the Emperor's intentions was doing nothing at all to ease his mind. If by some chance, some tiny chance, he was wrong, he could never live with the consequences of his actions. No, this must play itself out to the end. A short time later, Marcus and Kira walked over.
Sorry I hit you, Marcus said. It's not your fault, you can't remember anything.
I still don't believe any of this, Ethan told him. But if I'm wrong, I'm the one who should be sorry. I know how much you loved Lilanora.
His friend nodded.
That will have to do for now, I suppose.
He motioned with his hand.
Come on, let's get going.
Be careful, said Kira.
Ethan raised an eyebrow.
You're not coming? As much as I want to, I cannot, she replied. I have a responsibility to my people, or what remains of them. There are others still alive, I'm sure. We go to find them, if we can.
And when you do,
what then?
Kira shook her head.
I don't know. But I must find them nonetheless.
Ethan regarded her for a long moment, pondering whether the real Kira would abandon a friend in this way. Perhaps. Her commitment to her people ran deep. In the end, he decided it was irrelevant. Even if he was wrong and all this was actually happening, unless Shinzan himself was waiting to greet them, nothing in Lumnia could stop him. He was by far the most powerful being in the world, save for the Emperor. Then good luck to you, Ethan told her. She stepped in close to embrace him. At first he resisted the contact, but soon yielded and returned the affection. She felt real enough, he considered. More doubt seeped in. As he and Marcus departed the camp, Ethan noticed that very few of the elves or dwarves bothered to look up. They were truly and utterly beaten, and so few in number. "This can't be all that's left," he remarked.
"There's more somewhere, I'm sure," said Marcus. "Hiding, waiting for death."
He looked back at the camp.
"And it will find them soon enough."
They walked in silence for a time. Ethan kept a few paces back, watching the image of his friend closely. Sooner or later, Shinzan would make a mistake, and then he could be sure.
"How did you find her?" he asked. "Cat, I mean."
"Through the Urazi," Marcus replied. "The temple where she's being held was once one of their strongholds. It's abandoned now, but they still keep a watch on it."
"Very convenient," Ethan thought.
"So you are with the Urazi now?"
Marcus glanced back.
"That's not something I can talk about."
This response could only mean that his friend was indeed now a member. Martok had learned much about the Urazi, knowledge that he now possessed. He had seen the magic that inducted members into the Order firsthand, and he had spent years poring through their archives while learning the true history of Lumnia. No one knew the Urazi better.
"You can at least tell me what to expect when we get there," Ethan said.
"Expect a fight," he replied. "But nothing to worry about. A great mage like you should have no trouble dealing with it."
There was clear sarcasm in his tone.
"So you blame me for this?"
Marcus heaved a sigh.
"No, I know you tried. The truth is, I should have stayed on Earth when I had the chance. That's my fault, not yours."
Ethan saw his opening.
"I could still do it. I know how to open a portal."
Marcus stopped and turned, a look of annoyance on his face.
"You already tried, remember?"
After a moment, he threw up his hands and continued walking.
"Of course you don't. Why would I think you would?"
While moving on, he mumbled something else under his breath. Ethan couldn't make it out, though he imagined it was nothing complimentary. As midnight approached, the smooth terrain became rocky and pitted with grass-covered holes. Though following closely in Marcus' footsteps, Ethan still managed to slip twice, in the process bruising his ankle and tearing the leather of his boot. Silhouetted in the distance, he could now see a tall spire surrounded by four smaller towers. An abandoned road, mostly covered in grass and weeds, led to a wall topped with a series of triangular spikes. This encircled the whole of the complex, though several breaches in it could be seen as they drew near to the main gatehouse, likely the result of a siege long ago. Ethan cast a spell to enhance his sight. The wall was unmanned, and there was no sign of movement near the gate.
"Stay low," instructed Marcus.
Ethan followed closely until they were a few yards away from the main gate. From there they moved left, bypassing the first breach and pressing their backs to the wall just short of the second. Marcus drew his blade and looked back at Ethan.
"Can you tell if anyone is in the tower?" he asked.
Ethan nodded. Illusion or no, his heart was pounding. He cast a spell to sharpen his hearing, and then focused it on the spire and the towers. The only sounds that came back were the wind whistling through the cracks in the stone facade and the scurrying of rats.
"It sounds like they're all empty," he whispered. "Are you sure they are here?" "They're here, all right," Marcus assured him grimly. "But I was hoping they didn't know about the catacombs."
Still leading the way, he climbed over the rubble of the devastated wall, and, moving with uncanny silence in the shadows cast by a half-moon, skirted the courtyard inside. Ethan was tempted to tell him that all this caution was unnecessary. He didn't care if 100 Rakasa were waiting for them. He had no reason to fear them. Not any more. Nevertheless, a tiny voice in the back of his mind told him to remain on his guard.
"Who built this?" he asked.
Marcus raised his finger to his lips and gave him a warning look.
There's no one here, he whispered in response. I would know.
His friend sighed.
It was the elves, if you must know. They built it as a place to commune with the spirit of Lumnia.
As they rounded the final corner, a 10-foot-tall mausoleum made from polished white marble came into view. Along the side of this were carved the names of several elves, together with the date on which they died. A frieze above an iron gate depicted 9 elf women kneeling with heads bowed, each holding aloft a basket filled with a variety of fruits and berries.
The keepers of the temple were buried here, Marcus said. It was only after the mages drove them out 1,000 years ago that the Urazi took possession.
What did they use it for?
A place to hide, mostly. Somewhere safe to lie low after an assassination.
So they made you a Muraji, Ethan remarked thoughtfully.
Marcus paused.
Why would you say that?
Only a Muraji could speak so freely.
He tapped his finger to his temple. Martuk knew all there was to know about their inner workings. Marcus glowered.
I shouldn't have said anything. That was my mistake. Don't ask me anything else. Got it?
Still scowling, he pulled open the gate. The ancient hinges immediately screamed in protest, sending a shiver down Ethan's spine.
Yeah, I think being quiet is a bit pointless, don't you?
He stated, with a small grin. Softly muttering a curse, Marcus moved on. The interior was covered in cobwebs and dust. A life-size statue stood in the corners, each one depicting an elf in long robes, with hands folded and eyes downcast. In the center was a large basin made of black onyx. Elven lettering around the rim spelled out words, peace, knowledge, charity, and love. Marcus studied the basin for a time, running his hands along the edge and pressing it with his fingertips in different places.
Step back,
Ethan told him after several minutes had passed.
I can do it, Marcus insisted.
Ethan touched the basin anyway.
Rilzi Dur.
The basin shattered to dust, revealing a circular opening in the floor with a rusted ladder. Ethan stepped away with a smile on his face.
Do you know how old that was?
Marcus snapped.
I was trying not to damage it.
I couldn't care less how old it was,
Ethan shot back.
Either I've lost my memory and Kat's really in danger, or I'm sane and all this is just an illusion. So the last thing I care about right now is breaking some old bowl.
Ignoring Marcus' anger, he looked into the opening and then began climbing down. After 20 feet, he reached the bottom and cast a small orb of light to lead the way. Marcus was close behind, still fuming. They were now standing in a narrow passage that ended at another iron gate. Beyond this, Ethan could see the dim light of burning torches illuminating a room of indiscernible dimensions. Someone was definitely down here. When only a few feet away from the gate, he felt the tingle of a warning that raised the hairs on the back of his neck. A ward had been placed just on the other side of the entrance, one with which he was quite familiar.
Why do you hesitate?
A rasping voice called. A figure cloaked in a black hooded robe stepped into view.
You think this will stop me? Ethan scoffed.
Oh, I am sure it won't,
the Rakasa replied.
Not indefinitely. I am well aware of how powerful you are, Dragon Vane. But I also know it will take time for you to shatter this ward. Time, I believe, you will not want to waste.
From the fold of its robe, the creature produced an egg-shaped blue stone.
Do you know what this is?
Ethan glared furiously, but said nothing.
No?
The Rakasa looked past him to Marcus.
I would wager that you do.
He'd placed the stone on the floor and backed away.
This one is set for 10 minutes, and I do not need to tell you where its companion is. I would not delay if I were you.
With that, the creature spun and vanished behind the corner. Marcus immediately rushed forward, nearly toppling Ethan on his way past. With all the force of his momentum behind it, he planted his boot dead center of the gate's lock. It flew open, slamming noisily into the wall beyond. But the Rakasa was already gone.
"What is that thing?" Ethan asked, pointing to the stone. "It's a bomb," Marcus replied, red-faced and shaking with fury. "I've used them before. You place the other half near the target, and then use this to set it off."
"Can you disarm it?"
Marcus shook his head.
"No. It's been set to go off at a specific time. Only the one who set it can turn it off. And like that thing just said, you can be damned sure where the explosive half has been put."
A great wave of alarm was already rushing through Ethan.
"Do you have any idea where they'd hold her?"
he asked urgently.
"The catacombs are huge," Marcus told him. "They go on for miles. She could be anywhere."
Ethan looked at the floor. Though the ward would be invisible to his friend, he could see it clearly and knew what it meant. The moment he passed through, he would be robbed of all magic. The effects would be temporary, 20 minutes at the most, but still long enough to prevent him from reaching Cat in time. And it would take at least that long were he to remain here and try to break it. There was only one decision he could make. Drawing his sword, he stepped forward.
"Well, I guess we'll have to do this the hard way."
The moment he passed over the ward, he felt a cold wave climb up his body. He thrust out a hand to create a spell, but his fears were confirmed. He was powerless. The blade he was holding felt well balanced. Martok had been a master with a sword, and Ethan had memories of every lesson his ancestor had taken. Even so, this was a clumsy and awkward way to fight when compared to magic. And the Rakasa would now have a marked advantage over him in speed and strength. He quickly reminded himself that this was all just an elaborate deception. It had to be. He paused and explained his loss of magic to Marcus. His friend's jaw tightened, but other than this, he showed little reaction.
"Are you ready?" he asked.
Ethan nodded sharply. With the two of them, they might just stand a chance against the creature. Marcus was about as deadly a foe as one could find, and the look in his eyes said that he was a man with nothing to lose. Such men were twice as dangerous. They moved on through the only door ahead and quickly down another long hallway. Small alcoves were evenly spaced along the wall, each one containing a masterfully crafted stone sarcophagus. Eventually, after 100 yards or so, the hall split left and right. Marcus pointed to the torches, which now continued along only the right-hand path.
"It seems we're being shown the way. Rakasa don't need light to see."
"Or we're being deliberately led away," Ethan suggested.
"I doubt it. I think it wants to fight us."
Marcus cracked a thin smile.
"Well, it wants to fight you, at least."
After a few more turns, they entered a round chamber, roughly 50 feet in diameter and with a domed ceiling. Set in recesses along the left side of the wall was a series of black crystals, each 2 feet in length, thick as a man's arm, and standing on end. Directly across from their position stood an archway leading into the next chamber. Both men paused to exchange glances.
"I don't like this," said Marcus.
Even though Ethan shared his feeling, there was no other course but to press on. However, as he started toward the archway, a red mist began seeping out through its keystone.
"I don't suppose there's any chance of that stuff being harmless, is there?" asked Marcus.
"No chance at all," Ethan told him. "It's been triggered by the ward. Touch it, and it'll melt the skin right off your bones." He cursed himself for his carelessness. He should have seen the subtle addition to the spell. This much he could have dealt with in advance, even if he couldn't have broken the ward entirely.
"So, how do we get through?"
Ethan tore a piece of cloth from his sleeve and tossed it into the mist. It instantly turned to dust. "This was cleverly made," he mused, while scrolling through all the vast knowledge of wards stored in his mind. After a moment, he looked to the crystals. "It has to be one of those." There were 12 in all, each one identical and bearing no markings of any kind. All of them would likely dispel the barrier. But only one was the right choice. Choose wrongly, and there was no way of knowing what kind of added devilry it would unleash.
"Well," pressed Marcus, "how do we get through it?"
"We have to pick the right crystal," he told him.
"What happens if we pick the wrong one?"
"Nothing good." Time was running out. They couldn't have more than 5 minutes left to save Kat. Desperately, Ethan looked for any indication that might reveal the correct choice. There was nothing. Nothing at all. Not even so much as a spot of disturbed dust on the floor. All he had to go on was instinct. Finally, he turned to Marcus. "Whoever picks up the crystal will be the one who the magic is focused on. It should also stop the mist." He took a deep breath. "The moment it stops, you go on through and save Kat."
"Are you insane?"
Ethan smiled. "Hey, I don't believe this is real anyway. So what do I have to lose?" He crossed over to the third crystal along. With his heart thudding loudly in his ears, it was all he could do to keep his hands steady. He knew the consequences of a poor choice. It could be as mild as a containment spell, or as severe as being consumed by flames. Given the source of the spell, he doubted it would be the former. He reached out cautiously with both hands.
"You may not think this is real, but I do."
He suddenly felt Marcus grab his collar and jerk him hard back, sending him sliding across the floor. By the time he was able to regain his feet, his friend had already seized up the crystal. The mist quickly began to clear. To Ethan's amazement and relief, nothing else happened.
"I guess you picked the right one," Marcus said,
visibly relieved. The words had barely left his mouth when the floor beneath his feet turned to a thick black ooze. He tried to move, but his boots were stuck fast. Ethan rushed over and grabbed his arms, pulling with all his strength. It was useless. No matter how hard he tried to prevent it, Marcus was steadily sinking lower and lower into the mire. Ethan screamed and cursed, but astonishingly, Marcus had a look of calm acceptance about him.
"Leave me," said Marcus. "There's nothing you can do. Save Kat."
When Ethan ignored him and continued with his efforts, he hardened his tone.
"You're almost out of time. Either stay here and watch me die, or save Kat. You can't do both."
Ethan let out another feral cry.
"Just go," Marcus shouted.
His features then softened.
"It's all right. I'm ready."
By now, he was up to his chest in the ooze. Ethan knew he had to accept the inevitable. Unable to find any words, he gave his friend a silent farewell. Marcus nodded in return and then closed his eyes. Knowing that this was all a clever deception was not taking away the pain from Ethan's loss. Only the need to save Kat rose above this. Grim-faced, he dove through the archway and down another long passage. After a few more turns, he reached a large oak door. It was hanging wide open, revealing a broad, semicircular chamber lit by silver lamps suspended from the ceiling. Kat was there, secured with chains and manacles to the wall. She appeared to be unconscious. Ignoring the possible danger, he rushed over to her. She was indeed unconscious. The other half of the stone, identical to the first, was dangling from a thin string around her neck. Knowing that time would be up any second, he ripped the stone free and threw it to the far side of the room. This done, he wrapped his arms around her, holding her tightly to shield her body with his own.
"Very noble, but there's really no need for that," came the voice of the Rakasa. "The stone was disabled the moment your friend triggered the ward. A pity he wasn't more careful. A terrible way to die, I am told."
The shackles holding Cat vanished. Ethan caught her and laid her gently on the floor. He then turned to face the creature, his rage bordering on madness. The ringing of steel echoed from the stone walls as he drew his blade. It truly felt as if it were an extension of his arm. With Martok's knowledge of swordplay now a part of himself, he could fully appreciate the craft that went into forging his weapon. The Rakasa was already holding a long, curved blade, though its relaxed posture gave no indication that it was intent on fighting.
"Would you really end my life, Dragon Vane?"
it asked. The creature's voice had changed, taking on a distinctly feminine timbre. With its free hand, it pushed back the hood to reveal the delicate features of an elf woman. She looked remarkably similar to Kira, though with slightly more pronounced cheekbones and fuller lips.
"As I understand it," she continued, "men from the world where you grew up do not care to fight females."
Ethan sniffed.
"You are nothing more than a monster to me. I don't care what you look like. On the inside, you're just the same as any other thing Shinzan has poisoned."
"And you think that is my fault?"
she countered, looking very convincingly hurt.
"I did not ask to be as you see me now."
"You chose to side with Shinzan," he retorted. "You betrayed your people. And now you want what? Sympathy?"
He felt a tingling in his hands, causing him to suppress a smile.
"Keep her talking."
"I want your understanding, Dragon Vane. I must do as my master commands, but I do not relish it."
"That's not what it seems like to me. You had no problem killing Marcus."
She flicked her wrist.
"He deserved his fate. Compared to Spectre, I am an innocent. His past deeds warranted far worse than he received."
Her words further fueled Ethan's rage. "Only a little longer," he told himself. Aloud, he said,
"We all deserve to die. Who are you to judge?"
"I did not judge him," she responded. "In truth, I was rather impressed with his sacrifice. I would not have thought it within his character."
"You didn't know him like I did."
"No, I didn't. And you are right. We all deserve death for what we have done. What I don't understand is why you actively seek it."
She pointed to the still unconscious Cat.
"There is your woman. Why not open a portal and return to your own world with her? This fight is over. You have lost, but there is no need to die."
"So you will just let me leave?"
The Rakasa shrugged.
"Why not? My time is nearing its end. Soon my master will have consumed Lumnia. He will have no more use for my kind."
"And you would defy him? I don't believe you."
She gave him a half-smile.
"Shinzan did not command me to kill you, nor did he say that I should prevent you from taking your woman. My only orders were to kill any of your friends that might attempt to rescue her. So, you see, I have not disobeyed. Your friend failed in his mission, and now he is dead."
She was convincing. The Ethan who had first arrived in Lumnia might have been stupid enough to be taken in. But not any longer. That Ethan was gone. With a show of great nonchalance, he tossed his sword to the ground. For a few seconds, the Rakasa was dumbstruck, the only sound within the chamber the clatter of steel on stone. When she finally raised her eyes to meet Ethan's, her smile had turned vicious.
"Had I not seen it for myself, I would not have believed it. How are you that stupid?"
Ethan was smiling back at her.
"So do you truly intend to let me and Cat leave? Think about your answer before you say anything."
This exhibition of confidence clearly put the Rakasa off balance.
"No, of course I don't. You are no match for me with a blade. I was merely toying with you."
"Is that right? So you lied."
He clicked his tongue and shook his head.
"That's too bad.
I might have shown you some mercy.
After a brief pause, he laughed.
No, not really. Now I'm lying. You were dead the moment you killed Marcus. He might have been a cold-blooded killer, but he was still my friend.
Her face contorted in anger.
Before you can reach your sword, I will have...
Five orbs of red light suddenly surrounded the Rakasa, stopping her dead. Ethan smiled.
If you move, this conversation ends now.
Cat moaned softly, but did not wake. Ignoring the Rakasa for the moment, he went over and bent down, brushing the hair from her face.
It's odd you didn't sense the effects of the ward were wearing off, said Ethan, twisting to face the Rakasa again. You were once an elf before you were corrupted, and as far as I know, you still have a connection to magic. Dark and vile, but a connection. You should have been able to feel my power returning.
Strangely, the creature's anger had now faded, replaced by mild amusement.
Very good, she said. I was told you had gained much knowledge about the elves, that you had even been gifted with powers that all other mages have sought for centuries. But I wasn't sure until now.
She took a step forward, passing through the ring of red lights, completely unharmed.
My master thought you might come here rather than face him.
Reaching into her robes, she produced a small blue stone. The sight of it brought a grim smile to Ethan's face.
You think that stone will protect you?
Not indefinitely, no. But long enough.
Even as the final word was still leaving her mouth, the Rakasa charged. Ethan dove left, but such was the blinding speed of the attack, the blade still managed to inflict a deep cut to his arm. He reached for his weapon while at the same time casting a surge of energy behind him. It slowed the creature just long enough, giving him time to roll to his feet, sword now in hand. Only one thought pervaded. He would need to cast a truly powerful spell to shatter the protection the stone was providing. But it would be far from easy while in the midst of physical combat. After parrying two blistering strikes, Ethan knew there was no more time for delay. The speed and strength of the Rakasa was simply too great. Still heavily on the defensive, he called forth a stream of green smoke that quickly wrapped itself around his opponent's legs. A mere holding spell, but enough to allow him to step away and out of range of another strike. Realizing her danger, the Rakasa strained violently against the smoke.
Yulari Mons!
At the shouted command, a 5-foot-long iron spike shot up from the floor directly below the Rakasa, skewering her almost dead center. It was a devastating strike, yet even in the throes of agony she did not cry out. Her eyes remained determinedly fixed on Ethan. In a final act of hostility, she attempted to hurl her sword at him. As it was, the spike had made almost any movement impossible, and the blade crashed harmlessly to the floor. There was a certain amount of satisfaction in watching the creature suffer, as Ethan then consumed her in a magical inferno, leaving naught behind but a pile of ashes. The foul stench of death filled the chamber. He quickly cast a mild spell to clean the air, but even then it lingered on.
Ethan?
Cat was coming around. He rushed to her side and cradled her in his arms.
I'm here. What happened?
Her voice was cracked and her eyes were barely open. I'll explain later. Right now, I need to get you somewhere safe. She managed a weak smile.
I'm with you. That's safe enough.
He leaned down and kissed her brow. Her scent and the taste of her skin on his lips were exactly as he recalled. Fresh doubts formed. Could it be possible that this wasn't an illusion? Maybe he had already been cast from the heart of Lumnia. If he'd genuinely lost his memory, he wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And, so far, there had been nothing to suggest that this was anything other than what it appeared.
I need to ask you to do something for me, Cat said, breaking into this thought. But I want you to promise before I do.
He cocked his head.
Promise what?
Just promise.
Okay. I promise. She reached up and touched him tenderly on the cheek.
Take me back to Earth.
He regarded her incredulously.
Earth? I can see that look in your eyes. That's why I made you promise.
But what about everyone else? You want us to just abandon them?
Kat sat up and locked eyes with him.
There is no one left. There's nothing left at all. Why shouldn't we leave?
What about Kira? And David and Val? We don't know if they're dead or alive.
You want to just leave them here?
Kira would never leave Lumnia anyway, she shot back quickly. And David and Val are probably dead. There's nothing left to fight for.
Please, can't we just get away and be together?
Ethan closed his eyes for a second. In truth, it had occurred to him on several occasions to do exactly as Kat was asking. But how could he abandon his friends?
What if we try and find David and Val first? He suggested. They might still be alive. I wouldn't feel right just leaving them behind. I was the one who brought them here, remember?
Kat pushed him away and rose to her feet.
If you love me, you'll do this. I'm tired of fighting. Tired of watching people die.
Ethan stood up beside her and placed his hands on her shoulders.
I am too. But I can't just leave them here. You have to understand.
Kat scowled.
I understand that you care more about them than you do me.
That's not true, and you know it.
Do I?
A small movement in the corner of his eye caught Ethan's attention, but it was gone the moment he turned to look. Puzzled, he focused on Kat. She was staring at him with a combination of anger and desperation. He wanted to give in. But a thought occurred.
Marcus told me I couldn't open a portal, he said.
She huffed.
What does he know? I bet if you were to ask him, he'd come with us.
Marcus is dead, he told her. And so is Lila Nora.
A look of shock formed on Kat's face.
I'm sorry.
She was silent for a long moment. Then determination returned to her expression, and the words came with a rush.
In that case, there really is nothing holding us here. I hate to leave David and Val, but I'm not about to throw our lives away. Not when we could be safe and together. Don't you want that too?
Of course I do. More than anything.
Ethan could feel his will crumbling. He was on the very point of giving in to Kat's wishes when another movement caught his attention. This time, when he looked, he saw what it was. A tiny white dragon. It was staring at him from near the doorway, hissing and growling.
"What are you looking at?" demanded Kat.
Ethan ignored her. It was as if this tiny creature was trying to tell him something. It let out a wailing cry that sent waves of emotion stabbing into Ethan's heart. In a rush, he could see everything clearly.
This isn't real. What?
Kat grabbed his face and forced him to look at her.
Of course this is real. Have you lost your mind?
He took her by the wrists and shoved her back.
No, you're not real. The real Kat would never abandon the people she loves. And she sure as hell wouldn't ask me to do it either. You're just an illusion. All of this, Ethan.
Her voice had become soothing.
I don't know what's wrong with you, but I promise you, all of this is real. The only thing I want is for us to be safe. Nothing more.
What you want is to trick me, he countered, and it's not going to work.
For a long moment, Kat simply gazed at him. He could see nothing but love and pleading in her eyes. Finally, with an exasperated sigh, she spread her arms.
Okay, if I'm nothing more than an illusion, kill me.
A knot
twisted viciously in the pit of Ethan's stomach. This was it. This was the test. Could he trust his senses enough to risk so much? She looked real, smelled real, and sounded real. But she had not seen the dragon. And the dragon was the key. It was warning him not to be deceived.
"What are you waiting for?" challenged Cat.
Ethan closed his eyes and cleared his thoughts. At first, all he could hear was the repeated sounds of Cat's voice. Then, slowly, that faded away until only the beating of his heart disturbed the silence in his mind. He could feel a presence. No, it was more than that. It was a powerful strength of will, reaching across the void to urge him on. Lumnia, and something, or someone else, was showing him the way. A smile grew as he opened his eyes. Cat was still glaring at him, daring him to kill her. He extended his arms.
Azario Burr!
Cat's defiance instantly fell away, and her eyes shot wide as a cloak of green light fell upon her.
"Please, Ethan, don't do this," she cried out.
It made no difference. Her words meant nothing to him now. He snapped his fingers, causing the light to collapse inwards. Cat became frozen in place, her mouth still wide open in the middle of a pleading cry. Starting at the tip of her head, sand began pouring to the floor as her flesh disintegrated, ultimately disappearing completely. It was a painless death. Not that it mattered. An illusion feels no pain.
"Very well done," a voice said.
The walls began to ripple and distort. Ethan shrugged.
"I told you before. You won't beat me. Overconfidence is not an admirable trait. It could be your undoing."
The chamber faded, and he found himself standing in pitch darkness. He still had the sensation of ground beneath his feet, but there was nothingness surrounding him on all sides.
"What is it you want?" Ethan demanded. "I was going to ask you the same question. Surely you can see the futility of this.
What I can see is that you are afraid. Your time is almost up, and you know it.
Believe that for now, if you wish. But let me show you what I do know. Perhaps then you will finally understand."
Ethan sniffed.
"I already understand. I'm not interested in seeing more of your lies."
The voice took on a far more ominous tone. "You should be. Because this really will be your final chance to save yourself. And all the ones you love."